Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. And yes, indeed, happy birthday to us. It's been 1 year since we've been on the air, and we want to thank all of you listeners for being a part of that. With me tonight is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And with me is Don.
Hello, hello.
And we are back from a very busy weekend of our own GT. We've got several, I think it was four other events to talk about this weekend. But before we get into that, we've got some GW news. We finally got some more news about the latest codexes. Starting with start with Space Wolves. Don, what have we found out so far?
So if you've paid attention to YouTube or Facebook or anything like that, you've probably seen they've already had basically the full codex get leaked. It looks like it's going to be an amazing addition to, well, 8th edition. It also looks like it could possibly be a possible hard counter to the new Knight Menace that has been cropping his head up. Overall, looking forward to it tremendously.
So one of the items I really liked on the community page I thought was kind of neat is the Warlord traits. They have a kind of a new setup.
Yep. So each of the Warlord traits is a saga that you must fulfill a deed to get the full effect of. For one of the sagas, for example, it makes it so that he basically has a 6-up feeling pain mechanic. He has one of the easier deeds to achieve, which is he just has to pass a save successfully. And whenever you succeed at your deed, that buff that that character has instead becomes an aura, a 6-inch aura, so it affects all spaces around him. So basically, you do the heroic thing, you inspire everyone around you to do things like it. There's like that one. Then you also have another one that's like +1 to wound vehicles and monsters and a whole bunch of fun looking things. It should feel like you're playing an actual Space Wolves army with your characters. They're not going to hide in the back the entire game.
So it looks pretty exciting. I think new model wise, other than the Primaris, I did not see a new model for the Wolfen Dreadnought, but I guess that's still yet to come at this point.
From what I understand, it's probably just going to be the Venerable Dreadnought.
Aha. Okay. So anyway, very exciting. Should drop this coming Saturday or Friday night, midnight, depending on how your hobby store operates. Last week, we talked a little bit about Speed Freaks. And then, of course, within 24 hours of us recording, GW gives us a wonderful demonstration on their video of said Speed Freak. So they took the old model, smashed it with a giant wrench, and showed off this new dragster hot rod looking thing. Very, very Mad Max. You know, even had a lot of joking on the internet. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day. So if you like that Mad Max aesthetic, it is right up there. You know, just gargantuan headers and tubes coming off this engine, a little bit of framework, some crazy metal pieces kind of riveted into place for armor. All looks pretty pretty orky, but pretty awesome at the same time. By the way, if anybody's interested, I have a dozen of the old buggies for sale real cheap. Unbelievable. So anyway, so yeah, look really cool. And but everything's getting a little bit bigger. Oh, the other thing I thought was interesting from a competitive standpoint, the new dragsters, which is, I think it's actually called an Orc Dragsta or something like that. It's on a base. So I was actually excited to see more models on bases. So it makes it a little easier to play the game.
And actually, it's kind of funny seeing people complaining that it was on a base. And they're like, I would never play a vehicle on a base. And then you just look at, you know, like a Scout Sentinel or Warwalker or a Dreadnought.
I'm just thinking, yeah, some of the Forge World models that don't have it. We ran into a little bit in this tournament, items that, am I measuring to the hull? Am I measuring to the base? What am I doing again? So it's, you know, trying to get in play with the new edition. So interesting news all around. Adeptus Titanicus has dropped, so I got to see it with my own eyes and touch, feel, and caress the new models. The new Titans look pretty neat. Again, all Horus Heresy, so we'll see what comes out in the future. And a whole bunch of stuff for Kill Team, so kind of some more stuff coming out down the line from there. So hopefully we'll be seeing some more 40K-related items as we look forward to about 3 weeks until Nova Open, 2 weeks at this point. Anyway, first week of September, Labor Day weekend.
Well, I was thinking it was next weekend.
It's Labor Day weekend, so I think it's 2 weeks. I think we're 2 weeks from this recording. So hopefully we'll get some other big announcements. Some of the new more details on Gene Stealer Cult, we should be out by then, but I'm more curious to see what's the direction at this point once the codices are done. You know, what are they going to, are they going to do campaign packs? What are they going to do? I'd just be curious to see what the new game plan is moving forward. So that's your news for this week. After the break, we go break down the tournaments from this past weekend.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back from the break. This weekend we had 5 major or GT level events. Start off, we're going to head down south to Texas, where everything's a little bit bigger. Our major event from the weekend, War Games Con, used to be the Bell Lost Souls tournament. It had a huge turnout, 71 players coming out for their particular event. Interesting scoring system. They used straight battle points. They stuck true to their original roots for this particular event. So if you look at the standings, they look a little wonky. That's one of the reasons. They also did kind of an old school version of tournaments where they also combine the soft scores into the overall rankings. So without further ado, your top 8 are as follows. In 8th place, Nick Gower with Drukhari. 7th place, Philip Junghaus with Drukhari. 6th place with Imperial Knights, Chris Mills. 5th place, friend of the show, Vince Arroyo with Alpha Legion. In 4th place, Matthew Lee, not this time with Drukhari. He actually brought Thousand Sons. In third place, Michael DeHeos with Inari, Clifton Russell with Tyranids, and your 2018 WarGamesCon champion once again is Nick Donavati with Inari. His list was not posted, but that's okay. You've probably seen it before. It's pretty much the same list he took to LVO. So lots of Shining Spears and lots of Dark Reapers. So, Don, I know you had a strong opinion about their scoring system. Anything else to add to this event?
If you're going to do soft scores, don't apply them to actual competitive stuff, because that makes no sense. Have it as a separate thing, because when you apply a soft score for every game, and, like, say you get 5 points each game, that 5-round or 6-round game, that's 25 or 30 points that they just have over someone else. Even that's like an entire game that they just flat out won while the other person lost effectively. It's not good.
Yeah. Which is actually identical how they used to do the old tournament scoring back in the day. Used to be like, if you're running a 3-round event, you got 5 scores. The results of your 3 games, your 4th score was your painting score, and your 5th one was your composition and sportsmanship combined. And then there's, I think they were like 10 points short from making an even number, and that's when they added the pub quiz.
I don't think that someone that went undefeated should be in 11th place while there are 8 people above him that were defeated.
Yeah. Even our friend Vince, who there came in 5th, he went undefeated as well. 5th place. Sorry about that, dude. You didn't score enough when you throttled your opponents. Oh, well. Anyways, so opinions all around. If you have your opinions on when it comes to battle points versus win-loss, leave us a comment on our Facebook page. We're going to head across the Pacific now to the Hamilton Northwest Territories. It looks like New Zealand, or New South Wales, excuse me, in Australia. This would be the Castle Assault 40K, and your top 8 are as follows. In 8th place with Astra Militarum is Hayden Ford. Not sure if he's related to Harrison. 7th place, Ben Townsend with Ulithe. 6th place, Jeremy Young with Drukhari. In 5th place, with the Tau Sept, was Tom Bailey. In 4th place, Carlos Garcia with Dark Angels. In 3rd place, Warren Leahy with Drukhari. In 2nd place, Ian Andrew with Catagen Jungle Fighters. And your 2018 Castle Assault champion is Christopher Wright with Asuriani. So an interesting mix. Lots of elves in the top eight there between the Drukhari and the craft world. Your number one list here looks something like this. It's a battalion featuring a Laytok. He's got an Altok Skyrunner, Warlock, three units of five Rangers, Shining Spears, Hemlock Fighter. Threw in another battalion. This is where the Ulothe stuff comes in. It's got Eldrad, a Warlock. Yep, 20-man Guardian squad, plus two more squads of five Rangers is what I'm trying to say. And then he threw in, this is interesting, a Drukhari Black Art battalion, but it's all, not battalion, excuse me, it's an air wing. One Razorwing jet fighter and three Void Raven bombers.
Don't see too many of those.
No.
They see a lot of the Eldar type flyers because, especially if they were using IGC missions, they're actually really great for grabbing you secondaries.
I would agree with that, especially after playing the new secondaries this past weekend. But it's just interesting. He's got one. He's got five flyers in this list. Wow. I have tough enough time figuring where I'm going to put one. Okay, so there you go. That's your top list from Castle Assault 40K. Moving on, we had, like I said, several events this weekend. Although not an event of grand size, the Bag of Holding inaugural event is a pretty cool name. Next one is the Capital City Bloodbath. Wondering which capital city? That'd be Ottawa, Ontario, to our neighbors to the north. So pure Canada on this one with a couple Americans sprinkled in. And your top eight looks something like this. Conrad Matoika, surprisingly with a name like that, he's not playing Tau. He's playing the Inari. Ricky Johnson with Tau Empire. Diego Pita with Inari comes in sixth. Tim DeLefs with Inari comes in fifth place. Fourth place, Zachary Camor. Excuse me. Kamo, sorry, I've spoken about him a few times in the past. Comes in fourth place with Tau. Third place, one of those fellow Americans, Joshua Death with Aeronautical Imperialis, really? Okay.
You can't speak today, can you?
I cannot. I'm having a very tough day here. Second place, Sean Lee with Inari. And your 2018 Capital City Bloodbath champion is... Archon Scary of the Skari podcast with Drukhari. And this is the second major that he's won with Drukhari. And interesting enough, it's pretty much the same list, which involves a Coven battalion featuring Urian Rakath and a Homoculus, which electrocorrosive whip and a stinger pistol. He's got six Grotesques, two units of nine Racks, and one unit of five Racks, two units of three Talos, all with Haywire and Chain Flails and Macro Scalpels. And he backs that up with a Cabal of the Blackheart Spearhead with an Archon. Cheaped it out with a Venom Blade. Also made him the Warlord. Gave him the Command Point Battery as well as Writ of the Living Muse Relic. Three Ravagers with Disintegrators. A Raider with a Disintegrator and two Razorwing Fighters. Interesting, one with Disintegrators, one with Lances. At first, I'm like, okay, interesting. But then I look at the meta. If I look at the rest of that top eight, you've got Inari, Tau, Inari, Inari, Tau, Inari. And if you go down to the next eight, you know, 9 through 16 or so, Thousand Suns, Inari, Inari, Cult Mechanicus, Tau, Alpha Legion, Eldari, Drukhari, Chaos Space Marines. The highest ranking Imperial Knight was in 20th place.
And so you're going to start seeing that with Imperial Knights. People are figuring out what they're doing now, how to play against them. They're not going to perform as well. But the Knifeers won this event, won that last event, won the event before, and one of the future events we're going to talk about, they also won. Eldar, Dark Eldar, Inari, they're still very, very powerful. If not the most powerful point per point.
Looking at Skari's list, though, is that something? I mean, I know you do not like Talos. And does it have a place to have six of them in there? Or do you feel that it's, you know, just good for that particular meta?
So one of the other things to wonder about is, were they using the new missions? Because in the new missions, Taloses are free points, just massive amounts of free secondary points. They're even worse now, in my opinion, than they were before. Because every Talos is a big game 100 point. every other unit of Talos that you want to pick is a mark for death point.
Yeah, I wasn't too thrilled about that change, but anyway. It's just one of those, you just throw enough big game hunter targets, just go ahead, pick one. Earlier I said that Josh Death was playing Aeronautas. I don't know what they were thinking. Unless I took a quick look at his list, he's actually playing Astra Militarum, according to the paper. No surprise here. He starts off with a super heavy detachment, comes with a Shadow Sword, a Marauder Destroyer, and a second Marauder Destroyer. And then it goes into another battalion. Interesting. He's mixed it up a little bit. He's got a Talaran Company Commander followed by a Mordian Company Commander. Two Talaran Infantry Squads, two Mordian Infantry Squads, and then Officer of the Fleet and a Valkyrie. And then a battalion of Blood Angels, two Captains, Thunderhammer, Storm Shield, Jump Pack, and three units of Scouts.
Just out of curiosity, for his list there, did he put down any kind of combat doctrine for the Marauder Bombers? Because I know that's what he got in trouble with at the last GT.
There's no indication of it on his list.
Maybe he learned.
Maybe. But the Shadow Sword definitely does.
And the funny part is the Shadow Sword will not get the... Well, I guess the Talaran thing doesn't really affect it anyways. It gets the stratagem, but the ability to move and shoot without caring about the heavy penalty is not really needed for something that already does it.
I was going to say, I didn't think that the super heavies were even affected by their...
They are. That's one of the reasons you'll see Kadish and Shadow Swords as well, if they're not trying to hide it with reserve. So they can reroll one of the random shots.
Ah.
But yeah, so that's the keyword.
Yeah. One thing I thought was a little interesting on his list, at the very bottom, he actually tells his opponent which secondaries are available against his list.
That's nice of him.
That was nice of him. So Reaper, there's 4 points available. Titan Slayer, 4 points available. Headhunter, 4 points available. Big Game Hunter, 4 points. Kingslayer, 3. Ah, here we go. Here's our... And Gangbusters, 1. So they were using the old missions. Interesting.
So that would explain why the Talismanians were doing well. Because otherwise, they're kind of like Celestine now, where they just let people farm command points. Oddly enough, Celestine does not allow more than 4 command points now. Or 4... not command points. Battle points. Secondaries. Because of the stacking.
Yeah, the stacking thing kind of helps out a lot. So, anyways, that is your Capital City Bloodbath. Our next event is the Front Range GT in lovely, was it Westminster, Colorado? Get that? Yes, Westminster, Colorado. Heard it's lovely there this time of year. And your top 8 looks something like this. In 8th place, Lee Harris with Blood Angels. 7th place, Evan Newman with Knights Renegades. Coming in 6th place with Imperial Knights, Zach Fager. 5th place, Zach Kerstetter with Harlequins. 4th place, Ben Neal with Tau Empire. 3rd place, Gregory Wright with Cadian Shock Troops. 2nd place, also a friend of the show, Nathan Cartmel with Zeech Demons. Whatever happened to his Grey Knights? What happened there? And your 2018 Frontage GT winner is... Matt Evans with Imperial Knights. So, Don, you called it earlier. He went a perfect 6-0 with Imperial Knights. The Scourge continues. Have you had a chance to look at his list yet?
I have not.
All right. So, starts off with a super heavy detachment, House Tyrannus. It's got a Knight Crusader with a Venture Gatling gun. She's got 2 Venture Gatling guns. Is that possible? I didn't think you could do that with that. Okay.
The only one you can have 2 Avenger Gatling guns is if you're a Renegade Knight.
So that would be there it is, thermal cannon. Legal. Yeah, there it is, the thermal knight. Sorry about that. It's the way it's cut off. It's a little odd. So he's got a Knight Crusader and a Knight Gallant, followed by a Knight Warden. And then he's got, looks like, a second super heavy auxiliary detachment with a free blade. I'm trying to make heads or tails out of this list. Sorry about this, guys. And he's got, looks like, a Knight's Castellan. It's Knight's Castellan with House. What's weird? He says that they were a free blade, but then he says they're House Raven. I'm confused. Okay. To look at that later. Then he follows that up with a battalion detachment, and this looks like where all the guard come in. He's got a company commander with Kuros Aquila, another company commander who just holds his hand, and three infantry squads of 9 guardsmen and a sergeant. 32 guys and a bunch of knights. So what makes this list work?
Going first helps. Also, if you get Dawn of War deployment, knights do really well at that, especially when they go first. And let's see, just looking down the list of opponents, I see a grand total of 2 Blood Angel armies, which are probably the only ones that could actually take them out with relative ease, aside from other knight players, which that's just a trade for trade. Because most people don't have the right stuff to take out knights right now. They're still a little behind.
Yeah, I'm even looking at something. Like, I even took a look at the Harlequin player who came in the top 8 there. Still has a whole bunch of fusion pistols, but that's about it. And one unit of Skyweavers with haywire cannons will not take out a knight. You need at least, you might get like, on average, 12 wounds on it. So, and then there were 2 other knight players in the top 8 here. Just quick look, Zach Fager's list. Looks almost identical. He's got a knight castellan, 2 knight gallants in a super heavy detachment. The same in his guard battalion. And then looks like he's the one who brought the Blood Angels. So nothing new there. Evan Newman brought Knights Renegades. See if this is any different. Brought a demon battalion featuring a Changecaster Lord, Demon Prince of Khorne with Skull Reaver, 20 Bloodletters and 20 Pink Horrors and 2 Blue Horrors and 10 Brimstone Horrors. And then he rounds it out with Renegade Knight with Meltagun and Chainsword, another one with Avenger Gatling Guns, and then the last one is a Dominus Castellan. So again, I think that list was more designed to take out the other Knight players, and not that many showed up.
Yeah, that can be the trick with trying to focus against one kind of list, is if they don't show up, you don't do as well as you'd like.
Yeah, looking at this, we're falling out of the top 8, but it was just more curiosity got me at this point. I'm looking at the Necron player who came in 9th. Cryptek, Kinetic Scarabs, Tomb Blades. So he's looking for mobility there, and then he follows it up with 2 units of 5 destroyers and a trio of Doomsday Arcs.
Those can do a lot of damage to a knight.
Yeah.
And if a Shadow Sword's on the table, they will just flat do damage to them. You don't get a save with a Shadow Sword against the Doomsday Arc.
I'm actually kind of glad to see Doomsday Arc on the table again.
I think that'll be short-lived, unfortunately.
Why do you say that?
Right now, the big thing is the Necron Pylon, but Doomsday Arcs suffer from no mobility, because if you move them, they're useless. And if you have a immobile unit that is not something like the pylon that can see everything all the time, then it's not going to score you anything other than maybe kill something, and they're not that hard to stop from allowing them to do what they need to do, especially against knights that are shooting a whole bunch of 2 damage weapons at them.
Right.
Well, if you put a Doomsday Arc in a good spot, you don't have to move it. I mean, sure, you can hide models, but anything that's going to happen with anything. If it's out of range, then you're doing something wrong with those arcs. Because they've got...
It shouldn't be out of range. It's more so grabbing objectives. Because you're going to run out of warriors real fast. Warriors just die in droves. Immortals die in droves. Even destroyers die in droves, especially when playing against these knight armies. You just need to be able to get on 2 objectives.
Which is why he probably took the Tomb Blades with that extra mobility.
Yeah.
Just kind of get where he needs to be in a hurry. Or get behind some cover so they can't be shot at. So, very interesting. So that is your Frontage GT. So last but not least on the docket for this past weekend, just want to take a quick look to Stay in Your Lane GT. I did not post any standings, so hopefully those will come out soon. But it was the Hive Mind Crumbles GT. And that was our local event this past weekend. So quick rundown of your top 8. In 8th place, Taylor Bruce with Chaos Space Marines. In 7th place, this has got to be a typo. What is this nonsense? Don, can you read this for me? I can't believe this can't be right.
Might be because this guy finally got to play in a tournament, but that would be Eric Kakase with Prophets of Flesh and his Palace Pain Engines.
Must be a misprint. In 6th place, Steve Riley with Grey Knights. In 5th place, Lajan Milisek with Thousand Suns. Fourth place, Benjamin Jarek with Adeptus Custodes. Third place, Chase Enquist with Imperial Knights. Second place with Imperial Knights, Mark Fallows. And your 2018 Hivemind Crumbles GT champion is Daniel Olivas of ITC Top 10 fame with his famous Inari list. So, Don, you actually took on more of the TO role than I did, so I actually got to play. So, first of all, thank you for doing that. Appreciate getting a few games in. Walking around, we were playing with the new secondaries. What was your overall feel of the field?
So, a lot of people were still playing, you know, the newness. There were lots of Imperial Knights on the fields. But also saw a lot of the Eldar coming back out. And as weird as it sounds, it was kind of nice seeing that Eldar were not able to, well, Eldar, Dark Eldar, and the like, were not able to dodge all the secondaries anymore. People were actually scoring against them for once. So it looked like it was a little harder for them to keep up with the scores that compared to prior. But, yeah, Imperial Knights got hurt a fair bit with these new secondaries. It's just kind of nice seeing everyone's scores kind of less completely one-sided.
His kind of scores were a little bit all over the place. Being able to looking at Daniel's scores, obviously in first place, he's scoring a lot. He averaged 34 points pretty much in every game that he played out of 41, so that's pretty impressive. But also looking at some of the losses there, there's some, you know, Benjamin Jurek, for example, his two games that he lost, 20 points, 15 points. Following that with a 38-point wins and a 37-point win with his Adeptus Custodes. So seeing a couple more points out there is pretty interesting.
I also think that, as funny as it sounds, even with all the killing stuff, because of killing is harder to stack now, you're seeing that the mobile armies, the ones that don't stay put, like, I don't think we saw any Tau there, but that's a good example of an army that just hunkers down. I don't think that they're going to do anywhere near as well as they did with the old missions, because now the new missions, they're, you have to leave your safety zone to go grab objectives or positional things like recon or something like that, because the stacking is hard to do. It's not like before where you went, I'm going to take Big Game Hunter on an Imperial Knight, Kingslayer on Imperial Knight,
Titan Slayer.
All this other stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Kingslayer and Titan Slayer never stacked, but you get the idea.
Yeah, that stacking was kind of an issue, and saw a couple things online about ground control. That was another one I thought was interesting. A lot of people are like, why would I ever take that? The chance of having four units at the end of the game is pretty slim. I end up using it pretty much every game that I played in. It did cost me in one game. I just didn't think it through with my opponent. He was able to prevent me from getting downfield. But the other games, it was a great way to sneak up on my opponent because they're like, ah, good, I'm winning. And then all of a sudden, the final round of the game, I'm picking up 3-4 points that he didn't see coming. But I think that's also because of my high mobility army. I've been able to get to those objectives at the end of the game.
Yep. And mobility is just as important as killing. Remember, there's two things you can do to score points in this game. Stand on something, kill something. If what you're standing on is not where you need to be standing on, you need to get to where you're standing on it.
The other one is about standing on it. It's kind of a throwback, and we got to play a little bit of this, was behind enemy lines. And that was one is several times my opponents misread it and or didn't read it. So basically, it's scored at the beginning of your turn, and you have to be in your opponent's deployment zone as opposed to 12 inches from their edge. So that was an interesting twist there. So trying, and that's where the Flyers were back. Was able to park Flyers in my opponent's deployment zone and collect 2-3 points pretty easily. Also with assault based armies, even if you've got the Blood Angel Smash Captain, being able to get downfield and start the turn in your opponent's deployment zone, you're automatically getting points. So that was kind of a nice little boost to the point system there. I like that. That was a lot of fun. One list I did not get to see, but I did hear a couple opponents complaining about just because they just know how to deal with it. So I kind of whipped out the Codex, and so I don't, Donna, and also Ray, it's actually a faction you play, is Slotch was playing a Thousand Suns list, and all everyone said was, I didn't know Age of Sigmar tournament was going on at the same time.
So I guarantee it was because he was running all Zangors. So Zangors.
He was running a lot of Zangors.
Yeah, Zangors, the Zangors on the discs, the Shaman, all those the best way.
He had a lot of smite spam in his army, and then the shamans were doing, or not shaman, the disc zangors. People just weren't. I don't think a lot of people down here knew what they do, so they just left them alone. And those things did work because there were, like I was saying earlier, there were a lot of Imperial Knights at this event. And when you're just like, well, I'm going to hit you on two, or I'm going to hit you on twos, and my wounds are going to automatically happen on fours to hit with these AP1 weapons. It actually does a fair amount of work to these Imperial Knights where you're just like, take 20 wounds from this 10-man unit.
So these are Zangor Enlightens with the something bow. I forgot what it's called. But
yeah.
Okay, so how's he getting it up to a... Because on the base is a 6-up.
Yep, so you cast Prescience on them, and then if a Zangor Shaman is around, it also gives them another +1, so they're at +2 to hit.
Aha.
And then you just bring a Exalted Sorcerer or Demon Prince around them, and they're rerolling ones to hit.
God.
So it's just throwing lots of damage on these, you know, big tough models that are otherwise normally immune to small arms fire. I think they're only like strength 5 AP1, but it's still that many. Just take all this on top of the, I think he had something like 8 or 9 smite characters in there or something like that. So he was just plowing through these big models. And then he would like death hex the demon units and all this other crazy stuff. Thousand Suns are in a really good spot as far as chaos armies go.
Interesting. Yeah. I saw walking by, it's this gray blob of plastic models. And like I said, it looks it's interesting Signar models. I don't know what those are. So, appreciate you bringing that up because I had no idea what everybody was talking about. So,
oh, and then there was one other thing that he used that you don't see very often. That's the Blue Scribes, which he was telling me that they were doing so much work because they had like -1 to the enemy's casting. If you failed to cast, you like forgot the power or something like that. It was some ridiculousness that these little support characters that were just sitting on objective in the backfield the entire game were doing. It was pretty nuts.
That does sound pretty nuts. Wow.
Yeah, they used to soak up powers and shoot them back out automatically, and they also used to like randomly roll on the charts to see what power they'd just shoot off that turn.
Interesting. So for those who are wondering, no, I'm not trying to be some secret hipster for not loading my list. I just couldn't figure out how to get it from my phone to Pesco's pairings. So, but like I said, I only came in 7th, so I don't think my list is all that noteworthy. But for those of you who are curious, let me pull it up here. It's been...
Now, do you think that you're going to change this list with the new secondaries now that you've had a chance to play with them?
Well, let me rattle it off, then I'll answer that question because I'm not quite sure on that yet. So I start off with a Cabalite battalion. Interesting, I am not running Blackheart. I'm not all vected out here. I'm actually running Cabal the Flayed Skull, and so I got 2 Archons, 3 units of 5 Cabalite Warriors with no special weapons of any kind, 2 Ravagers with Disintegrators, 2 Raiders, and give me one sec here. I take that back. 2 squads of 5 Cabalars, 1 unit of 9 Cabalite Warriors, 2 Ravagers with all with Disintegrators, and a Razorwing Jet Fighter also with Disintegrators. And then all the Warriors and the Archon, well, one of the Archons goes into a Raider, and the other one babysits the Ravager. Follow that up with a Prophet of the Flesh battalion. I've got Urien and a Homoculus, 3 units of 5 Racks, 4 Grotesques, Don's ever-favorite 3 Talos with Chain Flails, and a Raider for the Grotesques. And usually with the Homoculus, I'm usually putting the Vexar Mass to Void Overwatch. And then last but not least, I take an auxiliary support detachment of 6 Skyweavers with Haywire Blasters and Zephyr Glaives. So what would I change knowing the new secondaries? Originally, I was going to take the Razorwing out because I'm really bad with my planes. I usually put them in harm's way somehow. But he did work with behind enemy lines, so I'm going to have to learn how to get better with my planes. That being said, the Skyweavers, I'm still on the fence about them. That D6 shots, I had one round where I put 23 mortal wounds on a vehicle, and I had another round where I put 4 mortal wounds on a vehicle.
I do think that they work a lot better if you have Doom.
I would agree. And that's why I'm like, so clearly I'll need another detachment, so I got to take one of these other detachments out. And that's the problem at here is what detachment do you take out? So, and being that the Coven's list is mostly close combat, the Grotesques and the Talos are kind of the freight train. Urien gives them the nice +1 strength. So now the Grotesque, the Talos get all the way up to strength 8. And so they're semi-decent at taking out knights. I add, they also can get a reroll to wound stratagem, which I used often. It's the main reason why I don't use Vect, because I need those command points for that. And that was able to be do some work. Interesting enough, the one game it didn't work was against Gene Stealer Cult. I could not roll for beans and consequently chose poorly on secondaries after that. I was a little underwhelmed by the Ravagers. They pour down a lot of shots downfield, but these stories of two Ravagers taking on a knight in a single volley, I don't believe it. That wasn't happening. So being that you can't mix and match and pile on Big Game Hunter on top of Titan Slayer, I kind of went, okay, I'll rely a lot more on the Barlock and Bikes and maybe do something like Sean Naden did with 3 units of 6. But after the wide variety and unreliability of the Skyweavers, I don't know if I can really count on them to get me Big Game Hunter and Titan Slayer on a reliable basis.
Yeah, I wouldn't rely on that too much. I do think that the Holocron Bikes are nice, but like I said, without Doom and Jinx, those two powers make Holocron Bikes great. But otherwise, Holocron Bikes, they tend to fall flat on their face more often than they do amazing, just on their own, from what I've experienced using them.
That's where I'm stuck with is, okay, which detachment do you take out to make room for that Eldar element? So, don't know. That part's going to take a little bit of more playtesting. One thing I did like a lot about the list, it does give up Big Game Hunter points left and right. I'm a little concerned about that. But and does give up Headhunter. There's 4 characters in there. You mentioned earlier the Marked for Death. So each Talos is worth a point now. So I may go to more Grotesques, larger units, because they're just below that threshold. But not sure.
One of the things that I noticed, granted I played a whole 2 games of my popping in and out with stuff, I had a grand total of like 5 units, I was at the previous tournament, but basically I had very, very low amounts of units in the armies that I brought, but I had a couple of units that were over 7 power level. I think I had 7 total, 3 total that were 7 or higher, one of which was like 36. I tried out the Astraeus pattern super heavy tank, which that thing is just, it's fun to use, but as far as the counter for it, it just dies. If they don't have a counter for it, it lives forever and does all the work that your army needs it to do. But I've found that, as weird as it sounds, the secondaries now, they are really, really beneficial if you bring big squads of things. Not quite, 120 boys or something like that, 3 or 4 squads of 30. But when you bring, maxed out squad, it gives up less points than when you bring all these little tiny squads, especially with Butcher's Bill and everything like that, where you can literally score twice a battle round because it's each player turn. And then you get more mileage out of your stratagems with, like Veterans of Long War or anything like that. So I think that the meta is actually kind of shifting to where larger units is actually a good thing.
I definitely agree on the stratagem part. Yeah, I never understood. Like, for example, at least 3 of my 5 opponents were like, oh, you got 3 units of 2 or 3 units of 2 Skyweavers. I'm like, no, it's 1 unit of 6. Why would I do that? And specifically because I knew if I need to get them into assault, there's a stratagem to avoid Overwatch. If you takes a casualty, I can improve their invulse. If there's all these things I can do with the stratagems and play, why would I spread those out among 2 bikes here and there? So that part I definitely agree. Looking at the secondaries, minimizing how many points you can hemorrhage to your opponent, it's another way of looking at it. Just make sure it definitely will change. Like I said, I had all these units and a fair amount of speed, so I was very successful with ground control. The new secondary, you start limiting the number of units you have that might be harder to pull off.
Yep. And it's just all about what secondaries that you build your list for. There are usually the mobility secondaries are what you build your list for. The killing ones are what you focus against your opponent, is how I viewed them, which is one of the reasons why a lot of my lists that tend to be more powerless, like the Death Guard, Knight list, and that kind of stuff, it can move, but it's built to take out my opponents, so I very rarely take the movement secondaries.
Yeah, my lists are, kind of said, like the opposite, and always about moving. I'm going to keep moving you around the table and baiting the traps, and then I can beat you by moving more of my units to focus on a small part of your army, but heck no, am I going to go toe-to-toe with your army, without whatever army you're taking. So I'll try to use the terrain to block off part of your your army. So now all of a sudden, my army is only attacking a third of your army. And then by the time you meander over to support that third, I'm already moved on to the other half of the table. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I know the second game I lost, I was outranged, and so I had nowhere to hide. So that was a problem. But I think really that came down to just I didn't fully appreciate the strength of his Alpha Strike, and I should just Alpha Strike him first or beta strike him on my turn two. Probably would have turned the game around that way. But overall, I like the new secondaries. Don, the few games that you got in this weekend, would you agree?
Yes, and I think we even tried them the weekend before, a little 8-person RTT. And I like the fact that I couldn't just go, well, you have 4 Imperial Knights, I'm just going to take Big Game Hunter, Titan Slayer, and King Slayer, and I'm done. You actually have to, against most armies that aren't MSU, you have to pick movement secondaries too now. It's very difficult to just go pure kill. And I really, really enjoy that. As funny as that sounds coming from me.
I would agree. And also we got the first run through of the new mission 4, which is the 5 objectives. The middle objective is fixed and the other 2 you can place. That was a fun mission. I really enjoyed that mission a lot.
I just remember the first time that we read through that, we're like, so what 2 objectives do you need to have? But rereading it, of course, you actually understand what it says, which is you get the bonus point if you control both of the ones that you place, which is 1 in your opponent's deployment zone, and the other one is anywhere else. As funny as that sounds, you would think that it'd be your deployment zone and your opponent's deployment zone, but the first objective you place anywhere that is not within 6 inches of a board edge or 12 inches of another objective. The next one you place has to be in your opponent's deployment zone.
So the way we made that easy is I had some white objectives and some black colored objectives. So my opponent picked 1 color and I picked the other. So it was really easy to hold both white ones or both black ones. And then we made the yellow, had like an orange one was the center icon. So it's really easy to keep track of. But yeah, it's funny how, people kind of put them in the traditional corners, and I put mine kind of close together, close at center field. So, because I knew my army had to push forward against this particular opponent. So I was able to capture the bonus. I think I got it maybe 3 turns worth. Was able to stem the tide as my rest of my army was bleeding points to my opponent.
Yeah, I think I want to try to put them all really close together because I like to play really, really tough assault-ish or just very, very bully type armies that like to get close to you and just beat you off of the objectives. So that works really, really well when you just put all your objectives, like because of the middle one, you put 1 fairly close to it and the other 1 12 inches, like a nice little triangle. And then you should have control more objectives the majority of the game, like maybe not turn 1, maybe possibly turn 2, but turn 3 plus, you should have hold more objectives for the entire game if you have a really tough, durable army that can get there.
So that is your tournament coverage. A very busy weekend this past weekend, 5 major events. After the break, we'll see how those scores affected the IC Top 10. We'll go over next weekend's events and some closing thoughts. Welcome back after the break, and after all of that activity over the past weekend, let us get into your new ITC Top 10 updated earlier this afternoon. In 10th place, Daniel Olivas, after his big win here in Arizona, resides in 10th place. Jumping up to ninth place with the big win at the Capital City Bloodbath is Archon Skari. Eighth place, our co-host Don Husen remains there with 616 points, a comfortable 8-point lead over Archon Skari, and merely 1 point behind seventh place Nick Gower, who had an impressive showing this past weekend as well. Sixth place, Jeff in Control Robinson at 619 points. Fifth place, Trent Northington at 627. Fresh off his big win at Wargames Con was Nick Nadavati, sitting here in fourth place. In third place, after a strong showing north of the border, Joshua Death at 644 points. At 668 points, we have a new player at second place. It's Mike Porter. We have not spoken much of Mike at this point, but he vaults into second place. But he still has a good 30-odd points to catch up to your current ITC leader, Matt Rutt, who's hanging still on to 691 points. Got some big events coming up still left in the season, but it is starting to wind down as we get into the fall months. Usually right around November, you see those big events kind of die off for the holidays, and then there's that last-minute scramble right before LVO. So, Ray, what events do we have next weekend?
All right, so currently on Best Coast Pairings website, there are two GT or higher level events listed. We've got the Siege World 2018 40K ITC Major at the North County Rec Complex in St. Louis, Missouri. And then the Bridge City Open at the Travelodge Saskatoon in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan in Canada. If anybody does not know where that is, that's actually just north of Montana.
I did not know where that was. And every time you see Siege World, I keep thinking of Shamu. I don't know why. Anyway, so that is our show for this week. Once again, hop on over to iTunes, leave us a review. Love to hear your feedback. The only way we get better is we find out what we screwed up on, so make sure to let us know with those particular ratings. If you have any other questions about the show and the list we reviewed on today's show, hit us up on our Facebook page at Exterminatus Podcast. Once again, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And I'm Don.
Thanks for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.